We've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
Second goes in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you here in studio at TSN 1290. We're also live on location at the Winnipeg Jets Fan Festival taking place at MTS Iceplex. A note about the Fan Festival. It is going on unabated. It's a great time down there at the Iceplex. But due to a power failure, the on-ice sessions in the Iceplex itself are delayed right now. As soon as we get any developments on when the power's back on, when we hear about what time the ice sessions are going to begin, we'll bring that to you here live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But the Fan Fest outside the Iceplex going on, head down there, say hi to Munzee, say hi to Paulie Edmonds. I think Dennis is there. I'm not sure if Shane's there, but go say hi to all the broadcast crew. A lot of great fun happening outside of the Iceplex on ice sessions, just delayed until they get that power situation resolved.
Drew, does this power failure that's happening at the Iceplex have anything to do with the power failure of Team USA at the World Cup of Hockey?
Well done. Bravo. You brought your A game with that line. No, but we will certainly get into the World Cup of Hockey. We will get into the woeful performance of Team USA. And I put the blame personally, and we'll get to it later on in the show, but I put the blame on the coaching staff and on the general manager and the management group. Probably more so than even the players, but that's a separate issue. Hold your thoughts on that, because we're going to get started, of course, with Winnipeg Jets training camp, which got underway yesterday with some physicals and some off ice training and testing of things of that nature, and they hit the ice supposedly at some point as soon as that power failure is resolved. Gentlemen, continuing obviously another year of Winnipeg Jets hockey here in Winnipeg. Is this, of all the training camps we've seen since the Jets 2.0, since the team returned from Atlanta, is this the most interesting Jets training camp since the team relocated from Atlanta?
I would say it probably is. And Dave was down there at the MTS Iceplex, and he was talking to several of the players, so he can let you know what it was like down there yesterday. But looking at the Jets season here that's coming up, preseason is starting next Tuesday with a game.
Yeah, but 3 days from now, it's amazing.
When you look, Drew, at all of the young prospects that are coming up now with the Winnipeg Jets, and the obvious one that fans are the most excited about, Dave, is Patrick Laine. But when you consider that the Jets have so much depth, probably more depth than they've ever had, especially at forward and in goal, not knowing who the starting goaltender is going to be for the first time, I would say, in 5 years, with maybe Connor Hellebuck having the inside track, but certainly three good goaltenders that are going to be fighting for the number one spot, I would say that there is the most excitement. And it has a little bit to do with the fact that the Jets had a really disappointing season last year, coming off of making the playoffs for the first time 2 years ago. But because there's so much youthful exuberance, and there's going to be maybe as many as four or five really good forwards that don't make the team this year, just because you have guys like Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor, rookies who are going to be pushing for roster spots, yes, I think there is so much excitement. And the fact that you have seven Winnipeg Jets that were playing in the World Cup of Hockey. So you have all of these players that have been playing a high level of hockey for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I think there is a lot of excitement. And, the Winnipeg Jets, it's not going to be a given that they make the playoffs this year. I think they're going to be in tough, and they're always going to be in tough in the Central Division. As you know, Drew, five teams from the Central Division made the playoffs last year, so It's not going to be easy. But I think when you factor in all of these high-level young players that are going to be pushing for roster spots, I think this is the most exciting time to be a Winnipeg Jets fan, and there probably is the most excitement that we've seen maybe since the Jets came back from Atlanta 5 years ago.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the push for a spot on this team is at the highest level of that it's ever been.
The competition.
The competition, yeah. Like the forwards are you know, the young forwards in the cupboard are definitely pushing out of the Moose realm and now into the Jets, and meaning that there may not be as many veterans as we're used to seeing around this Jets team as there have been in the past, which is probably not a bad thing, because you know, you always kind of want that youth movement pushing the older guys out, because you know, with skill and a reason to move them out. So you know, it's interesting, and yesterday was quite the session, and it was funny because you know, we were at the Iceplex, and you're watching the players do the kind of the initial on ice testing, and then there was a secondary rink where you know the really veteran players went there first, and so it was kind of like sprints in the initial one, and then you could just see it was really high level testing on the secondary rink. But the fear from some of the players, and I took a picture, it's on our Illegal Curve Instagram, and you can see like Andrew Kopp and Nikolai Ehlers and Ben Chiarot just looking on and seeing like what Dr. Craig Sloan-White had in store for them. And it's interesting because we were talking to Sean Mathias after the skate, and he was saying that he was just dead. Like he was literally just like drenched, and he was just like out of breath still after being in the room for a bit, and he was talking about how tough the testing is, and he's like, he had Craig in Florida, and he's gone through a testing of his before, and he says it's quite vigorous. So it's interesting that all the players essentially said that it was extremely vigorous. They were happy to get it over with.
Sure.
It was interesting, actually, a player like Josh Morrissey was actually he almost enjoyed it. Because I think he sees it as an opportunity to really test what he's done in the past, and kind of use it as kind of a barometer and say, okay, well, here I am now. And you can see that he's really ready to kind of make a push to get on this roster.
To play on the Jets as opposed to the Moose.
Yeah, exactly. Because you remember, I mean, we always, you know, folks have a tendency to panic when a player doesn't bust through in this first year. But of course, with goalies and defense, it generally takes a little bit longer to kind of crack that lineup. So.
Sure, for a former first round pick of Josh Morrissey in this instance, of course, as a defenseman taking longer, spent a couple years now with the Moose and able trying to crack the Winnipeg Jets lineup.
You know, Dave mentioned Ben Chiarot and Mark O'Dano and some other players, Sean Mathias. Sean Mathias, of course, is going to be one of the older players in this forward group and, of course, on a one-way contract. But when you're talking about both forwards and defense, last year Ben Chiarot would have been more of a lock to make the Winnipeg Jets, but with the signing of Brian Strait and the emergence of Josh Morrissey, especially finishing the year very strong with the Manitoba Moose, there aren't as many guaranteed spots on this team. And that's why, Drew, I think this training camp is going to be so interesting, because you're going to have some really good players. Andrew Kopp, Dave mentioned as well. I mean, Andrew Kopp, who was a staple on that fourth line as the center, is not guaranteed.
And that's to your point, Ezzy. You're exactly right. If you look at particularly the bottom six players, the bottom six forward group, there are, you know, you can say there's, you know, about 12 guys maybe that are battling for as few as five spots. I mean, that is incredible competition, so that these guys don't have the luxury of sort of easing their way into training camp like they may have last year, where the competition wasn't to that point. Especially among the forward groups, it seemed like you knew who your forwards were going to be at the start of the season. Whereas this year, if you got 12 guys who are battling for the final five spots, well, I mean, that's incredible. You don't have the ability to be a slow starter. You can't, you know, take a half a week or a week to get your legs under you. You have to hit the ice running, skating as the case may be, today when the on-ice sessions begin. I mean, there's guys that you don't really even think about that, you know, with regard to possibly making this team. Like guys that, you know, you sort of, they're not at the forefront of your thoughts as a huge Jets prospect. You know, Quinton Howden. You know, he's a guy who came over from Florida last year. They signed him on, you know, July 1st or in and about there. He wants to be on the Winnipeg Jets. He doesn't want to be on the Manitoba Moose. So he's got to prove himself. Guys like Brandon Tanev, who they signed at the end of last year. He's a guy who wants to be on the Winnipeg Jets. And then you mentioned Andrew Kopp. Well, Andrew Kopp was better towards the end of last year, but he certainly didn't guarantee himself anything. Adam Lowry took a step back last season from where he was 2 years ago. He hasn't guaranteed himself anything. The internal competition for the Jets' bottom six forward group is more severe, more competitive than it's ever been before.
I don't think we've seen the bottom six forward depth like this since 2 years ago when the Jets made that push for the playoffs and they acquired Lee Stempniak and Yuri Tolusti to play on their third and fourth lines. I don't think we've seen that. And I think this is a great problem for Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy and Jamie Compan and the coaching staff to have. It's going to be so fascinating to see who gets those last few spots, because to Drew's point, there's going to be some really good players, whether that's Marco Dano, whether that's Brendan Lemieux, Nick Petan, Quinton Howden. There's going to be some really good players, and maybe Pascal Vincent and the Manitoba Moose are going to benefit the most from that.
Well, Nick Petan, I think it was Mike Swatsky, wrote an article in the Free Press today talking about how Nick Petan's almost like a forgotten player. Mm-hmm. Like nobody, you know, he started obviously the season with the Jets last year, then played a lot with the Moose, and then played some with the Jets again. And it's interesting how a lot of people don't even talk about Nick Petan anymore. It's almost like he's an afterthought. And then another benefit, I think, to this depth that we're talking about is, if you think about it, and I wrote about it in the papers this morning, who are we talking about the entire time right now? Everybody's talking about Laine. But who is nobody talking about?
Kyle Connor.
Yeah, nobody's talking about Kyle Connor. So the I think the person who's going to benefit most from all of the Line A furor is a player like Kyle Connor, who comes in and, you know, look, a lot of people have him penciled in as a third line winger, you know, and you know, having that opportunity. He could play with the Moose, you know, there's no guarantees. But the fact of the matter is, there's really, I'm not saying there's no expectations. Obviously, the team has high expectations for him. And fans, when they actually get around to thinking about him, will have high expectations for a guy who ripped up the NCAA the way he did last year. But I'm just saying, it's just, I think it's good for him that, you know, really everybody is talking about Laine.
Sure.
Nobody's talking about Kyle Connor.
Because, well, and we talked about, I think we asked Paul Edmonds about that last week when he was in Penticton for the Young Stars tournament. Because you're right, from when it was apparent that last year was going to be a lost season, and it was apparent relatively early on, Kyle Connor's performance in the University of Michigan was a big focus for Jets fans. They were looking for hope, and he was the hope. But then when, you know, the draft lottery came and went, and all of a sudden we're picking second, Kyle Connor becomes a bit of the forgotten man. And I think your point is well taken there, Dave, that this is a guy who might benefit from that. Patrick Laine, you know, based on what we've seen and based on what we, on be it at the World Cup, be it in interviews, is a guy who doesn't shy away from the spotlight.
Right.
Kyle Connor, I don't know if he embraces the spotlight to that degree, but it's not on him right now. So he can sort of just ply his trade, get his first professional training camp, you know, sort of be a normal player in that training camp as opposed to the savior of the Winnipeg Jets organization.
And let's be honest, guys. Kyle Connor is still going to prepare the same way for Jets training camp that he would have regardless if the Jets drafted Patrick Laine. But the point is that it can't hurt to have less of the media spotlight and pressure on you, because there's already going to be pressure that you put on yourself, right? He leaves the University of Michigan, signs his entry-level contract. He wants to play for the Jets. He knows that if he can't crack the Jets lineup, he's going to play for the Manitoba Moose. But you're right. I mean, we saw it yesterday with Paul Wiesek's column. There's basically an article about Patrick Laine, not just in Winnipeg. Across North America, you see them in ESPN, TSN, the Hockey News.
Sure.
Name any hockey publication you want. Patrick Laine, aside from Austin Matthews, was the most hyped-up prospect coming out of this draft, drafted second overall. And I think it is going to benefit Kyle Connor. And, you know, it remains to be seen, guys. And that's what's going to be so fascinating about training camp here. Everybody kind of has Shifley, Wheeler, Ehlers penciled in as that first line. The line that I called Schwielers last year.
I don't like that name.
I think it was actually Huss that first came up
with
it.
So you're both smarter than Schwielers.
Well, Huss is smarter than me.
Well, so the two of you can put your brain powers together and come up with a better nickname than Schwielers.
Yeah.
For a man who came up with the GST, I mean, that's just...
Yeah, Drew.
I know. That was a good one. That's what I'm saying. He set the bar pretty high.
No, I'm with you, Drew.
Some respect, Drew.
I'm showing respect. You set the bar so high with the GST line that Schwielers is not your best work there, is all I'm saying.
By the way, are there any of those GST shirts left from the first year? Because I never got my hands on one. I feel like True North should have maybe hooked me up with one.
Well, guys, hold on. As the guy who was the fuel of the GST line, getting it into, you know, the newspapers and with, you know, the TV crew, I think I should also get a T-shirt.
Yeah.
We're putting out Ezzy and I are putting out shoutouts.
Dave is the best hype man there is.
Yeah, you guys are both great hype men. Let me ask you this question quickly. How many rookies is too many to have in your forward group?
Well, we talked about it last year, Drew, with Andrew Kopp playing fourth line center and Nikolai Ehlers playing left wing by the end of the year on the top line. And then you throw in guys like Mark Scheifele and Adam Lowry. These guys are also young. Joel Armia was a rookie. That was one of the problems with the Jets last year, in addition to the fact that the defense wasn't very good last year, but the fact that I thought that their forward group was too young. That's why I, along with other people, were pushing the Jets to sign Lee Stempniak. And we don't have to go back and rehash that from a year ago, but certainly the Jets were lacking a veteran presence in the bottom six. And credit to Chevy, who went out and signed a guy like Sean Mathias, who's played for several teams. He's most likely going to slot in on that third line, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if there's an answer to how many rookies is too many, because when you're talking about the NHL as a whole, it's getting younger and younger. The average age is 26 now. And when you're talking about the Winnipeg Jets, we know Patrick Laine is playing on this team.
Sure.
And when you talk about Kyle Connor, there's a good chance he's going to play on this team. So there's just so many good young players. It's going to be tough to not have some of them on the roster. But, I mean, you do have to be wary of not having the average age of your team being 21 years old. So, you know, maybe a guy like Andrew Kopp has to spend a little bit of time in the AHL over an older player, right? So.
Let's head to Iceplex. I believe Brian Munz is there. Munzie, how are you this morning?
Thanks a lot, guys. Good morning, everybody. And Paul, with what was supposed to be kind of an electrifying start to the upcoming NHL season, well, electricity is wreaking havoc on us right now. We should update everybody first and foremost. No on ice right now for the Winnipeg Jets. There is some power inside MTS Iceplex, but the team's not ready to go yet, and we don't know exactly when they are going to be on the ice, but boy, there's a lot happening outside here today, isn't there?
Well, there's a lot of people still in anticipation of Fan Fest that will go as planned here today. So if you're planning on coming down and enjoying the festivities here as a fan with all of what they have going on, we'll explain more as we go along here in Illegal Curve as well about what they have to offer the fans. Please come down. Make sure that you're making your way toward the north side of the Iceplex to park. And then certainly admission is free. Dennis Bayak is here. He'll have some live interview sessions with Kevin Cheveldayoff, the GM of the Winnipeg Jets, also the owner and governor, Mark Chipman. So lots going on here today, but pardon the pun, yes, it was electrifying, but a power outage. So the on-ice sessions will be delayed today, but they anticipate that they will have a couple of sessions going on as they did yesterday and will for the rest of the weekend and into next week.
Lots of fun for the entire family. They've got the pancake breakfast going on right now. There's bouncy castles. There's face painting. Everything except for right now on ice. Winnipeg Jets action going on here at the Iceplex. Guys, we'll keep you up to date as the morning continues. For Paul Edmonds, I'm Brian Munz at the Fan Fest here on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 20 minutes after 9 in the morning here on TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. With 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Gentlemen, that mashup of Winnipeg Jets goaltenders, you heard a great save by Pavlik, a great save by Hutchinson, and a great save by Hellebuck. The forward competition is an interesting one, but truthfully, it's really they're battling for spots in the bottom six when the top six for the Winnipeg Jets is more or less set for this coming season. The goaltending question is one that has kept many Jets fans up late at night worrying about Pavlik, Hutchinson, Hellebuck. Hellebuck, Hutchinson, Pavlik. Is this the year that you think that True North throws in the proverbial towel with regard to Andre Pavlik as a number one NHL goaltender? Is this Connor Hellebuck's job to run with at the start of training camp? Or is this truly a competition between the three goaltenders to see best performance is going to be the guy who gets the nets to start against the Carolina Hurricanes in October?
Well, Drew, first of all, I don't know how many questions that was. I think it was three. But, no, I mean, when you're talking about the Winnipeg Jets goaltenders right now, there isn't a clear-cut number one, in my opinion. And if you ask me who I think is the best goalie of the three goalies and the goalie that I think should get the majority of the starts, I'm going to say Connor Hellebuck. But when you look at last season and the way Connor Hellebuck played, and then he struggled a little bit towards the end, but Andre Pavlik still played the most games for the Winnipeg Jets last year with 33. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, Connor Hellebuck at times was the number one goaltender, and Michael Hutchinson was the backup for most of the year. But no, Drew, I mean, I don't think that the Winnipeg Jets have thrown in the towel on Andre Pavlik. He's still under contract for one more year. He's still the NHL goalie with the most experience. And when you're talking about Andre Pavlik, sure. I mean, we know that Andre Pavlik has struggled. But Andre Pavlik was still the goalie that got the Winnipeg Jets into the playoffs for the first time. And you can say that Andre Pavlik wasn't very good at times in that first round series against the Anaheim Ducks back in 2015.
Yeah, two seasons ago.
But look at, I mean, Connor Hellebuck, I think, is going to win the starting job. I think what's the most interesting, guys, is what the Jets are going to do with that third goalie that doesn't make the team. Because as we know, it's very rare that NHL teams carry three goalies on mm-hmm. their starting roster, meaning they don't, on their
23-man roster.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you look at it, Connor Hellebuck is the only player that wouldn't have to clear waivers. He's the only player, because he's on his entry-level deal, that the Jets could send to the Moose without fear of losing him on waivers. And I don't expect Connor Hellebuck to play much for the Manitoba Moose this year, and this is why. Connor Hellebuck's been an AHL All-Star twice, Dave. He's nothing to prove at the AHL level. When you're talking about Connor Hellebuck now, he's a guy that at 23 years old, I think, has earned an NHL goaltending spot. Whether you want to call him the number one goaltender, which I think he will start the majority of games, but I don't know at this point, guys, for example, if he can play 60 games, if he can play 65 games, like a Henrik Lundqvist or a Pekka Rinne or a Corey Schneider. I still think that the Jets are going to benefit from having a veteran goaltender, whether that's Pavlik or Hutchinson. So I would think that the Jets start the season with Connor Hellebuck and Andre Pavlik, and Michael Hutchinson is the guy that plays with Eric Comrie for the Manitoba Moose.
The guy that they try to put through waivers, yes. Which they may or may not lose him in that instance.
Right, and there's a good chance that they will lose him, or there's certainly a chance that they lose a guy like Michael Hutchinson. And I'm not putting Michael Hutchinson down, because I actually am a big fan of his. And I think that he's an excellent goaltender. But right now, it's going to be two of these three goaltenders, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone would agree that the way Connor Hellebuck played, you know, in the 26 games that he played last year, and he had good numbers and everything like that, good even strength, save percentage, and the fact that Andre Pavlik struggled quite a bit, and Michael Hutchinson at times struggled, I would expect it to be Hellebuck and Pavlik. And then going forward, getting up to the trade deadline, sure, maybe the Jets try to move Pavlik and dump the remaining salary, but right now I would expect Pavlik to be the backup to Hellebuck.
It's an interesting question. I think, like, if you look at the stats, like, Hellebuck is the guy. There's no question. I mean, everybody is pushing for that, you know, shiny new object that they've seen, and that's clearly Connor Hellebuck. And now he's not so new anymore, obviously. We've seen him now in Winnipeg all of last season with both the Moose and the Jets. It's an interesting question as to what's going to even happen. I think Hellebuck, I think I'm agreeing with Ezzy that Hellebuck will be the guy in Winnipeg next year.
This season coming up.
Yeah, this upcoming season.
Sure.
So I also expect him to be next year as well. But yeah, for
the goaltender going forward.
Right. But the interesting thing, I think, is in terms of development, is what's going to happen with Eric Comrie. Because really, from the Jets' perspective, ideally, Eric Comrie is going to really have his opportunity to be the Moose guy. And if you send a guy like Pavlik or Hutchinson down, how does that impact his development? Because he's not, you know, necessarily going to play the amount of games that they want him to play.
It's a good
point.
I mean,
but the truth is, he wouldn't play that if Hellebuck was down with the Moose anyways. It would be Hellebuck's team, and then Comrie would be sitting behind
him. Well, that's the problem with having too many goaltenders, is you can only play one goaltender per game.
Right.
I mean, that's the downside, if it's a downside, of having too much goaltender depth. The flip side is that if you develop a goaltender like Eric Comrie, and if he develops as his numbers for the Moose last year may not have been fantastic, but anybody who watched the Moose, as you did on a regular basis, Dave, night in, night out, he was fantastic when he was in net for the Moose.
He was very good. I mean, it's Eric Comrie is a very nice goaltender, and I've talked to a lot of people who think that he's got a lot of skill and a lot of upside, and especially with that opportunity. you know, that he had last year to play as many games as he did, because obviously it wasn't an expectation that Hellebuck would be up with the Jets. So I think that Comrie is a nice piece that the Jets are developing, and it is a luxury, right? But the truth is, if you send one of those guys down and they get claimed by waivers, the truth is you have opportunity.
I don't think the Jets are too upset if Pavlik gets claimed on waivers. In fact, I think that they're probably happy if Pavlik gets claimed on waivers if they choose to send him down, because I think most people would agree that it's unlikely that he's going to be here beyond this season when his contract is up. Now, is anybody going to claim a $3.9 million goaltender who's now has never played up to that amount of a salary? Probably not, unless a team gets desperate at some point in time and has tremendous goaltending injuries. But that's the problem. I mean, you spoke to it. You signed Hutchinson to this two-year contract this past offseason. Presumably, you signed him to that. Did you do that because, because you want to give the guy, you're doing the guy a favor by giving him that extra year? I mean,
well, just remember also that you have to think about the expansion draft.
Sure, the expansion draft.
And so you're going to lose a goaltender. You could potentially lose a goaltender there. So
right, and even though I said earlier that I think it could be Andre Pavlik, because Hutchinson signed the two-year contract, it's possible that Andre Pavlik is, as you mentioned, Drew, put on waivers for the purposes of playing him with the Manitoba Moose and possibly as the backup to Eric Comrie. I agree with Drew. I mean, the Manitoba Moose want Eric Comrie to get his starts. I mean, his development is going to continue, and I imagine 2-3 years from now, the plan is to have Connor Hellebuck and Eric Comrie. But, you know, guys, what's also very interesting, not only do the Jets have, you know, the three goaltenders right now competing for the starting role, you mentioned Eric Comrie, also Jamie Phillips,
sure,
who just finished his career with Michigan Tech, was playing for the Jets at the Young Stars tournament, and I know he struggled a little bit there. But Jamie Phillips is another guy who is kind of knocking at the door of guys that want to get some playing time. So
he had a great career at Michigan Tech.
Right. So now the Jets have two really good young goaltenders in Eric Comrie and Jamie Phillips who are pushing for a roster spot. So this is, again, a great problem for the Jets management and coaching staff. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, it all signs point right now towards Andre Pavlik, this being his last season. And, you know, just as an aside, Andre Pavlik, you know, might have had some struggles, but this guy has still been an excellent goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. And again, I go back to what I said during the first segment. He was the guy that got the Winnipeg Jets into the playoffs. So you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, he gets credit for it, but it's a world of what have you done for me lately? And
sure,
last year he struggled.
Sure.
Take this for what it's worth, but the Hockey News did, you know, as part of their season preview special, and they go, you know, team by team and whatnot, they did a projections for the Winnipeg Jets' success based on who their goaltending tandem is. And of the three possibilities, Hellebuck and Pavlik, Pavlik and Hutchinson, Hutchinson and Hellebuck, only Hutchinson and Hellebuck, if those two goaltenders are the Jets' tandem, only that combination put the Jets over the 50% playoff probability threshold.
Okay, so, you know, we don't have to play the season.
Well, again,
there you go.
I said take it for what it's worth. And whatever you want to, I mean, past performance doesn't necessarily dictate future performance.
Well,
but take it for what it's worth. That's what the Hockey News, you know, published. And so I'm just here to share it with the public, Dave. That's all I'm doing as part of a broadcast.
True, that's why I took my entire mortgage and I just put it on the Jets winning the 2019 Stanley Cup.
That's what the Hockey News once said.
Exactly.
Well, in that case, you're going to be homeless probably relatively shortly. Let's head to break. When we return, Paul Wiesek is at the World Cup of Hockey in Toronto. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly after 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Toronto, where we're pleased to bring into the program from the Winnipeg Free Press, Paul Wiesek. Paul, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, fellas, I'm happy to do so. I got to correct you, though. I actually flew home from Toronto last night.
Ah.
So I've been out there. I covered that World Cup for the last 2 weeks. I had the last week of training camp, and then, of course, the whole last week. But I am back in rainy Winnipeg.
Well, in that case, I do apologize for that error. But I understand that more, you know, a week in Toronto would be more than enough time, and you'd be desperate to get back to Winnipeg at that point in time.
Toronto's an interesting city, isn't it, right?
Yeah.
Canada's biggest. There's all kinds of opportunities there. But I'll tell you what, that is the definition of a nice place to visit. Would not want to live there.
Yeah, it's a little much to live there. I agree with you there. Anyways, Paul, thank you for joining us this morning here on the program. You were covering the World Cup of Hockey, so we might as well get started on that topic. Canada and Russia in one semifinal today, and then tomorrow Sweden and Team Europe in the second semifinal. You know, can you foresee, you know, what has to happen tonight for the Russians to knock off Canada and prevent, you know, the overwhelming favorite from getting back into the finals? Or is this really, it's going to be a self-inflicted wound that Canada is going to have to experience in order to not advance tonight?
You know, everything and anything can always happen in the world of sports, and I've been surprised before, but I'll tell you what, based on what I saw in that, of that Team Canada, both in training camp, and then, of course, for the last week, as far as I'm concerned, everybody else in this tournament is playing for second place. I really don't see a way this Canada team actually loses a game. I think they run the table. I think they not only win tonight, I think they win whoever they play in the final. I'm thinking it's going to be Sweden, but Europe has surprised me before. I think they sweep them two straight. I don't know that a lot of people realize the final of this thing is actually a best of three. This Team Canada team is just so much better than everyone else. It's men playing with boys, and yeah, hey, I get it. Malkin and Ovechkin and all these other, NHL and KHL talents on Russia, you know, it's nothing to sniff at. But they're just simply not, nobody in that tournament is in the same class as Canada right now. I think it's Canada, and I think it's Canada for fun tonight against the Russians.
Now, Paul, looking at the tournament as a whole, and you wrote about this a couple of days ago for the Winnipeg Free Press, looking at Team North America and the amount of hockey fans and media that were really disappointed that Team North America didn't make the semifinal. When you look at how they played and how exciting they were to watch with Connor McDavid and Johnny Gaudreau and, of course, Austin Matthews, first overall pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs, are you sold on the concept of Team North America and Team Europe? And would you like to see the same format if the World Cup of Hockey is played in 2020?
You know, like a lot of people, I thought it was a goofy contrivance heading into this tournament. And I thought the existence of those two continental teams just told you all you needed to know about the failure of hockey to grow internationally, right? That they had to add these two continental teams just to get to a manageable tournament, 8 teams. But man, oh man, these guys have played themselves into the hearts of everybody. They've certainly shown themselves to belong, both the Team Europe under Steinbach's Ralph Kruger and Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. Let's remember there's a huge Winnipeg and Manitoba imprint on that Team Europe team. And then this Team North America team, fellas, that is as much fun as I've had covering professional hockey maybe ever, was covering those kids. You know, and it's interesting, just to pick up on what I was saying before, but I don't see anybody beating Team Canada. You know what? The one team that maybe might have done it would have been North America tonight. And that's just not because they're better or more talented or more structured or any of those things, but because the way that team plays is so unlike the way anybody else plays or has played for the last 20 years in the NHL, that it just, they would have brought a wild card to the table. They would have been the Donald Trump of professional hockey. Nobody had ever seen anybody like this. And so you don't know how it's going to go. Boy, what a disappointment that was, that this country was deprived of seeing North America and those kids take on Babcock and that structured Team Canada team. And what a study of contrast it would have been, right? Because those kids, you know, they're all about the 75-foot tape-to-tape pass up the middle. There's nothing but breakaways both ways and odd man rushes and all that. And, of course, Mike Babcock, the antithesis of that, Mike Babcock, he might not have invented boring hockey, but Mike Babcock definitely perfected boring hockey. I'd have loved to have seen that contrast tonight. So, yeah, you know, just to finish the point, I mean, there's everything to love about those European or those continental teams, both Europe and North America, and I don't even think it's a question anymore. I think two questions have been answered the last couple of weeks. One, yes, there's going to be another World Cup. Ticket sales are great. Corporate sales are great. The TV ratings have been huge. And secondly, when they have another World Cup, I don't think it's even up to for debate anymore that there is going to be two continental teams in it.
Paul, that kind of touches on what I wanted to ask you about. Was the we're always told that Toronto's the hockey mecca, but there seems to have been a lot of open seats for some of the afternoon games. How what's the reception generally been like for teams other than North America or Canada?
Yeah, you know, I know it hasn't looked great on television at times in those afternoon games, but I can tell you, in talking to organizers there, a lot of those empty seats you were seeing were, in fact, sold seats. The number I heard just before I left on Thursday, I was talking to someone, it was basically 90% of tickets for this event were sold. Boy, that's a jackpot, right? Let's remember some of those afternoon games. You know, you had Sweden and Finland and things like that. That's a great matchup. But at the end of the day, that's the middle of the afternoon in a thriving North American metropolis. It's going to be tough to get 20,000 people out for that. This thing's going to make huge money. There's absolutely no question in my mind. You know, Rogers got behind it fully. The corporations, and so much of this too, when you look at the success of these events, it's not about the fans in the seats, it's about the corporate sales and the guys in the luxury boxes. And on all those fronts, this thing was profitable. And you know what drives the NHL is money, and you know what drives the NHLPA, it's money. And they're both going to walk away with a Brinks truck out of this, I think. So, you know, if it's profitable, they're going to do it again, you got to figure.
Paul Wiesek, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Paul, who did a worse job, the Team USA players, John Tortorella, or Dean Lombardi?
Yes, is my answer to that question. Geez, what a mess from the start, right? I mean, so let's tick through the boxes, right? Let's start with Dean Lombardi. In what world do you not bring Phil Kessel to this tournament? I mean, I get it. They wanted to play this more defensive style, and they didn't think they could match up with Canada skill-wise, so they put together a different team. But you know what? Phil Kessel plays on any team, I think. I think Phil Kessel would have played on Team Canada if he was Canadian. So that was a head-scratcher right from the start. And then, of course, they couldn't score any goals, right, in those first two games. And, you know, what does Phil Kessel do better than anything is bring an offensive element to his game. So that was weird. You know, Tortorella is a – boy, he comes up with some strange decisions, and every now and then you wonder if he doesn't do bold things like sit Dustin Byfuglien for the first game, not because it's the right thing to do, but because he wants to show everybody how smart he is. Geez, having said that now, I mean, Byfuglien looked terrible on that first goal against Canada, and it ended up opening the floodgates. So, you know, I ended up eating a little crow on that because I read Tortorella pretty good for sitting Buff in the first game. And then, of course, the second game, he's the author of one of those really bad defensive lapses that we haven't seen out of Dustin Byfuglien in the last couple of years. So, I mean, that's Tortorella there. And then, yeah, you know, let's talk about those players. Boy, they all looked bored, didn't they, right? You know, up and down that lineup, boy, Blake Wheeler is just about invisible, I thought, in that tournament. Part of that had to do with the role they had him playing. He wasn't playing that top-line role like he does with the Jets. But I didn't see a whole lot of him. Now, that's not to put anything on Blake Wheeler. I think up and down that lineup, that just looked like a very uninspired hockey team, and they played like it.
Paul, all seven of the Winnipeg Jets, if you include Ivan Telegin, I guess seven of eight Winnipeg Jets are now out of the World Cup of Hockey, and training camp, of course, started yesterday. We got to ask you about Jacob Trouba. You sat down and talked to him last week, and there are no new developments as far as the Jacob Trouba contract front goes, but what does Jacob Trouba do now that he's back in Winnipeg? Is he just sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, right? And I wonder if something doesn't, you know, well, I'll put it to this way. If something is going to happen, it's going to happen very quickly, like in the next 48, 72 hours, that kind of thing. They're going to announce that they finally got a deal. If we haven't heard of a Jacob Trouba contract by next Monday or Tuesday, boy, you got to start wondering, right? Because now all of a sudden you're almost in a situation where this is, you know, I mean, yeah, it's still training camp. And Jacob Trouba has had a huge training camp, having played with that North America team for the last couple of weeks, played in practice. But, boy, if he's not on the ice come Monday or Tuesday, that tells you everything you need to know about the state of those negotiations. Now, having said all that, my sense in talking to Trouba, and I put the question directly to him, was there any doubt in his mind that he would be in the Jets lineup come opening day of the regular season? And he said there was not. There was no doubt in his mind. I'll take him at his word on that.
You know, obviously they've got a big ask, and obviously they're a part here on more than just money. They're also a part on Jacob Trouba wants to be a big, major part of this Jets team moving forward in a way that he hasn't really been, right? I mean, he's kind of fit in a strange way on that team. So that's also up for discussion. Boy, if they haven't resolved those things by Monday or Tuesday, though, you got to wonder if Jacob Trouba, and is he holding out, doesn't come to be the headline that dominates the rest of Jets training camp, and that's no good for anybody.
Paul, you seem to have unfettered access to most of the players, the Jets players specifically, during this tournament. What was your overall impression of Patrick Laine, and how do you think he'll be able to handle the rigors, the pressure that are, you know, building here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, I think he's more than adequately prepared to handle media pressure and media spotlight. That's all he was doing there. He was the guy everybody wanted to talk to after every finished practice and after every finished game. And with the exception of the last game in which they lost to Russia, he was available every time. He answers the questions. He answers them honestly. He's not a, like, kind of one of these polished guys who can talk to you forever and never actually say anything. He actually gives you something worthwhile. Every now and then he makes headlines, but for the most part, he just gives you honest, forthright answers. Now, having said all that, knowing the way the Jets operate, you know, I think they're going to button down this kid the way they button down just about everybody else. I think they're going to protect him. They're going to make him available because they have to make him available, but they're also going to make him unavailable a lot more than he ever was with the Finnish team. And I think they're going to bring this kid around slowly in that regard. But, you know, I mean, he's got all the skills on the ice. He's got all the skills off the ice. But it's going to be a learning curve. You know, I watched them with that Finnish team, you know, and there's a lot of things that are going to happen for Patrick Laine to reach his full potential. And it is not going to happen overnight. This is not a Teemu Selanne situation. I think everybody's hoping that Patrick Laine is going to come out and score 76 goals like Teemu did. You know what? Patrick Laine might have all the skills that Teemu had, but nobody scores 76 goals anymore, and it's not going to be Patrick Laine. This is a kid who's going to need a system and a support structure on the ice. He's going to need the supporting players to bring out his best. And I don't know that the Jets have either of those things just yet. They're working towards it, and the years to come look bright. But right now, I don't know. I don't think we're going to see the best out of Patrick Laine this year because this kid, it's going to be an arc. It's going to be a learning curve, and it's going to take a while to reach the end.
Paul, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned Dustin Byfuglien, and he had that rough performance in the second game for Team USA after being healthy scratched for that first game. I don't know that he's sort of quote-unquote angry Buff entering the Winnipeg Jets training camp, but is it maybe a good thing for the Jets that he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder after the way, you know, he was handled at the World Cup and the way the U.S. performance went down? Is that maybe a good thing for the Jets entering this season?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with the idea that it's angry Buff. My take on him heading into this tournament was just the opposite. This is a guy who's had a career season, right? It's been unbelievable for him. He got the big money long-term contract extension back in February. He got the A the Jets gave him. They named him to the national team, all those things. It's been a pretty good year for him. Now, having said that, you're quite right. It was a sour tournament for him. But I don't know. You guys know Buff as well as I do. You know, that's a guy kind of water off his back. Buff doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who kind of, you know, has lingering regrets or animosities about much of anything. I would imagine he's more or less forgotten about this tournament already. And if he hasn't already, he will in the coming days. I think it's happy Buff that starts the season for the Jets. And I think a happy Buff is a productive Buff. I think the Jets fans are going to love what they see out of Dustin Byfuglien this year. I think he picks up where he left off last year, and offensively, defensively, in every other way. I think it's all good out of Dustin Byfuglien this year for the Jets.
Paul Wiesek is a columnist for the Winnipeg Free Press. Paul, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
So, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Take care, Paul. It's Head to Break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Yeah.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, big thanks to Paul Wiesick of the Winnipeg Free Press for joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. If you're looking for something to do this morning, starting at 11 a.m., the grand opening of the new Keener Jerseys location at the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Ezzy, you will be there after the show. I believe you're signing autographs, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it there's a dunk tank you're going to be in?
Well, no, not just me. Dave Manuk.
Dave Manuk of Legal Curve.
Dave Manuk is going to be
there. Yeah.
We're going to be down there. Yeah, Portage and Sherbourne. The Keener Jersey guys, I was there last weekend, and they were letting me know they're actually going to have a jersey giveaway
Fantastic.
Down there. So this is their new store. It's just opening. Make sure you head down there. As you mentioned, 11 to 3. It's going to be a great time.
Absolutely. The corner of Portage and Sherbourne. You can't miss it. Let's head out to the MTS Iceplex where Brian Munns gives us an update on what's going on at Winnipeg Jets Fan Fest.
Thanks a lot, guys. And first of all, obviously, good news this morning, Paulie. After a little bit of a delay out at MTS Iceplex here this morning, players are getting themselves ready for day two of training camp.
Well, they're going to go at 11 o'clock after the power outage here today, so everything was straightened out. From what we understand, there was a pole that fell down, and it fell down into some water, so it was a little bit more tricky than just getting the guys there, erecting the pole, and getting power back. They had to bring in some specialized equipment in order to do that. You know, electricity and water don't mix, but Winnipeg Jets are going to mix with the frozen water here today at 11 o'clock. But, you know, aside from the on-ice sessions, there's lots going on here today at FanFest. If you're a gamer, come on down. You can play Xbox. Jets versus the Moose. Yes, I lost to a 9-year-old today, but he
can't
had
can't believe he beat you 6-2.
He had help, and don't forget to come down as well to the TSN 1290 booth, and you can enter one of three prize packs to be given away by Monday, and it's for Jets tickets for the exhibition games, some shirts and jerseys and things like that. So lots going on here today. Too numerous to mention, but we will as we go along today at FanFest.
FanFest continuing until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Dennis Bayak is on stage right now. A number of the players, Mark Chipman, Kevin Cheveldea, off. We'll all be out for interviews today. There's Bouncy Castles. The Pancake Breakfast continues. FanFest is underway. Come join us at MTS Iceplex here on TSN 1290.
Well, those guys got me at the Bouncy Castles and the Pancake Breakfast. That's right up my alley with those two things.
Yeah, Bouncy Castle. Who doesn't love a Bouncy Castle? By the way, shout out to Paul Edmonds, who's down at the Iceplex for FanFest. I'll tell you this much, Paul. If you're down there and you want to play Xbox, you might have been beaten by a 9-year-old earlier, but you can certainly beat me because when I play video games, I just randomly hit the buttons. I don't know what I'm doing. So he could definitely beat me at NHL 17. But, yeah, definitely if you're in that area, right, head down there.
Played a real video game, hockey video game since NHL 94.
Yeah, I was going to say. Maybe 96.
Yeah, maybe, but it's been a lot. There's too many buttons now. That's my big problem.
There's
too many
buttons
on the remote.
Once Sega broke with the A from AB, which was obviously Nintendo, to ABC.
I could handle C.
It was a game changer.
It was when there was trigger buttons on the on the top of the remote. That was too much for me at that point in time.
Dave, when you guys were young, when you and your brother and your sister were young, did you guys ever have like the Nintendo Power Glove or the robot? You know, the Power Pack.
Yeah, no, I remember
that came with Nintendo
Power Glove, which was featured in the Fred Savage movie, The Wizard.
That's true.
No, I always wanted the Power Glove, but I never had a Power Glove.
Yeah, you were deprived as a child.
I was deprived as a child. Yeah. My parents didn't, you know,
they didn't love you that much.
No, they said, if you want it, you have to earn it.
Okay. And you obviously didn't want it that much.
I just didn't want to go to work.
Okay, fair enough. That makes perfect sense. Let's talk about the World Cup of Hockey. We got the World Cup Hockey semifinal number one between Canada and Russia goes tonight, and then semifinal number two between Sweden and Team Europe goes tomorrow. We start with Canada-Russia, guys. You know, what you've seen out of Canada, the same question I sort of asked Paul Wiesick. How does Russia defeat Canada tonight, or is it just going to be probably a foregone conclusion, the result of tonight's game?
Well, hopefully Russia has Pavel Datsyuk in the lineup. Pavel Datsyuk didn't play the last game, and he's been dealing with a lower body injury. But, I mean, when you're talking about Team Russia, they've gotten through to the semifinals, but they haven't scored a lot of goals.
Mm-hmm.
And Team Canada right now, you know, starting with their first game against the Czech Republic, which they won 6-0, they just haven't had a single blip on the radar, Drew. Team Canada has only been trailing in this tournament for 90 seconds.
That's when the U.S. opened the scoring and had that 1-0 lead in their second game.
90 seconds.
Yeah.
Three games. It's incredible. And, you know, we talked to Paul Wiesick about this. Team Canada is a well-oiled machine. We know this. They were the favorite heading into this tournament. I think Dave and I both picked Team Canada to win. We won't mention who Drew picked to win, Team
USA. I picked the Team USA, and I mea culpa, that was a wrong pick. I didn't realize that they were going to be coached by a jackass the entire time. But
Drew, it's totally fine that you picked the team that finished last in the tournament to win the tournament.
Hey, I picked Canada-Finland as the final.
Oh, wait, and I picked who?
Did Finland even score a goal in this tournament?
One goal. And who scored it?
I love when Dave asks who, and he knows the answer.
Who scored it?
Valtteri Filppula.
Oh, okay.
But there's only one of us who picked Canada-Sweden, yes, so there's only one of us.
Credit to Dave Minuk for that possibly happening, but don't overlook Team Europe.
I was
going to
say.
Because Team Europe has been nothing but the Cinderella story. They've been well coached by Ralph. Ralph Kruger is a very good hockey coach.
Yep.
He's a good coach, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Soccer as well.
He did have a soccer. He did have a component of soccer there as well. He's a very good coach, and he had them prepared to play that first game against the Americans. And then they took care of business against the Czechs, and that's all it took for them to go through to the semifinal round.
Yeah, but when they played Canada, they didn't look like such a hot team, did they?
Nobody's looked good against Canada. It's amazing. I mean, that's why Canada is still the overwhelming. I mean, they've been. This isn't even full strength Team Canada. That's the scary part. That's why I thought that with all the injuries, with everything, you know, that you could say maybe was going against them. With the injuries, that maybe this is the time that they're going to have a letdown on the international stage, and they still could, because if they don't win this tournament, it's going to be a letdown. But the fact that they've been so good in the round robin and so dominant and toying with their competition in the manner in which they have, you know, hindsight 2020, I was a fool for picking anybody but Canada.
Drew, I know we don't have enough time to do a full Canada Russia preview here,
and
maybe we
can
do it in the next hour because we got Marty Biron coming up. But my problem is, Team Canada has dominated best-on-best international tournaments since the 2010 Olympics, right? They won gold at the 2010 Olympics, 2014 Olympics. They even won a World Hockey Championship in 2015, World Juniors and all that. And excuses are always being made for, oh, well, it's just not fair and all of that. Well, no Tyler Seguin, no Jamie Benn, no Duncan Keith, no Jeff Carter. Yeah. I mean, all of these excuses, no Connor McDavid, no Nathan MacKinnon. Everyone's saying, well, what if U.S. had Johnny Gaudreau, and what if U.S. had Jack Eichel and Auston Matthews? Well, you could say the same thing. What if Canada had Connor McDavid? If Canada's dominating this tournament, guys, right now, without Connor McDavid, what would this tournament look like if they had Connor McDavid? So I'm with Paul Wiesek.
Let me ask you this. Let me interrupt you there, Izzy. Does Connor McDavid even make Team Canada?
Of course.
Yeah,
come on.
Does he?
Well, but that was the question back in 2006 in Torino with Sidney Crosby.
Right.
And I remember at the time, we didn't have the show at that time, but I remember we were all saying, why isn't Sidney Crosby on this team? Sure, he's a rookie, but he's better than most of the 27-year-olds. So, yeah, I think Connor McDavid absolutely makes Team Canada. But certainly a guy like Nathan MacKinnon, I think, would.
Well, then who are they bumping off? I mean,
well,
you know,
probably a good player. Claude Giroux, Corey Perry, one of the guys that were.
But those guys are replacements. So take away Claude Giroux and Corey Perry because they're not actually on the team. So are you taking Connor McDavid over Tyler Seguin or over Jamie Benn?
Maybe over Brad Marchand.
Even though Brad Marchand's on the top line.
No,
right
I'm not
now,
saying otherwise. He's adding a certain element. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, you know, if you're going to take Connor McDavid or Brad Marchand, I think you're taking Marchand.
I mean, I agree with McDavid. You that I think McDavid would have been on the team had there not been this under-23 team, but I can see an argument for why he wouldn't have been on the team.
Sure,
at the
he's
same
still
time.
Young, 19 years old,
right.
All that.
So you're absolutely right, though. The excuses made by, and we'll talk about the Team USA performance coming up after Marty Biron in about 15 minutes' time. Well, we'll talk about that. But you're absolutely right that, you know, the excuses that the Americans are making about their performance, no Gaudreau, no Matthews, no Eichel, blah, blah, blah. Canada can say that, and then some with the players that they are missing from their lineup at this tournament.
Right, Drew, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a proud Canadian. Canada is the best hockey country in the world, and until they're beaten, whether it's at the Olympics or the World Cup, I mean, if Russia beats Canada today or Sweden wins the World Cup of Hockey, you can't say that Canada isn't the best at hockey. Because since 2010, when they lost a game to the U.S. in the round-robin stage, they haven't lost a single game. Nobody can beat this team. So they're the best. They're the best. Team Canada is the best. And someone has to knock them off the throne before you're going to tell me any different.
Well, the Russians get their opportunity, their kick at the can tonight, and then, depending on who wins the tournament, a best of three. And that's what, you know, it's hard to believe that when they go to, I can see them losing in a one game to Russia, you know, one game, anything can happen in one game. It's hard to believe that they would lose two out of three games, which is what the finals would be against either the Swedes or the Team Europe. It's hard to believe that in a best of three they'd even lose two out of three, given that they haven't lost in going on, you know, 14 years now or whatever it is.
Especially with this Russian defense. Like, I think, like, the truth is, like, you know, we could be like, because it is only a one game, you could always say that, you know, any team can win one game, mm-hmm. you know, but I think that even if the Russia scores an early goal, Hockey Canada is not going to panic. Although, to their credit, Russia, their hockey Twitter tweeted out, worried Hockey Canada men, Bob's on the case. So you never know. A hot goalie could win a game.
Goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky. Let's head to break. When we come back, Marty Biron joins us. We'll talk about more on the World Cup of Hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuke with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Marty Biron. Marty is an NHL analyst for TSN. You also see his work on RDS and the NHL Network. Marty, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on again.
Our pleasure, Marty. Always enjoy talking hockey, talking goaltending with you. Wanted to start this interview by talking about the performance of the Team USA at the World Cup of Hockey. We know a tremendously disappointing performance, and a lot of the blame for that performance is being pointed at head coach John Tortorella. Tortorella is a coach you are very familiar with in your time with the New York Rangers. You know, for our audience that, you know, obviously aren't in the dressing room, they're not behind the scenes, you know, how would you describe John Tortorella as a head coach? It seems from our perspective, admittedly a bit of an outsider's perspective, is he made things more difficult on himself and on his team during this tournament than he needed to do that. Would you agree with that assessment? What was your experience like?
I don't know if he did or not. I really liked John Tortorella as a coach because I felt like the team was well prepared, that he was capable of switching the system and trying to forge an identity to a team. But it's done over a long period of time, right? It's done over training camps and 82-game seasons and then another season, and then you have players that are under John Tortorella for 2-3 years, and now that identity comes through. When you're in a tournament like the World Cup, you got 3 weeks with training camp and the games and all of that. You got 3 weeks, and I don't think that's enough time to be able to forge the identity that John Tortorella was trying to get with this group of guys. Now, I'm not going to put all the blame on Torts because he's right. Team USA did not have the talent pool that some of the other countries have. And you can put Team North America in that category. You can put Team Europe in that category. They just didn't have the speed and didn't have that talent. So for me, it was the selection process was flawed. They didn't pick the right players. And then once they picked the players, I think now it came down to the coaching staff and John Tortorella to find the right structure for them to play with. And I think they focused too much on Team Canada. They focused too much on trying to emotionally get them all hyped up to beat Team Canada and to that was their championship game and all of that. And they forgot that Team Sweden may not play Team Canada and could really well win the World Cup, you know, and that you don't have to worry about one team. You have to worry about yourself, how you can be successful. And so for me, the whole system, the whole selection, the whole structure of the team was flawed from the beginning, and that's what you get. You get 0-3 and very bad performances.
Marty, Team USA obviously lost to some pretty good teams, Canada being the best of the bunch, but were you surprised at the way Jonathan Quick played? Because he certainly looked very sharp in the pre-tournament games, but he struggled quite a bit in the two games he played, letting in 7 goals.
Well, I think Jonathan Quick was kind of like the rest of the team, right? They peaked too early. They peaked in the first game in Columbus in the pre-tournament against Canada. That's not where you want to peak. You look at Carey Price. He had a bad game. Well, not a bad game. He had an average game at first in 10 months. and then got better in the second pre-tournament game, and then got better in the first and second game of the round robin. So to me, Team USA, Jonathan Quick, peaked too early. Now, I was always on the side of Corey Schneider and thinking that Corey Schneider probably was their best option in that to succeed. And but the three goalies you had, you could have picked any one of them, and you would have been in the right. You would have been making the right decision. There's no wrong decision when you have those three goalies. But unfortunately, what happens with a guy like Jonathan Quick is that he gets really hot. He can steal you a game, and I think that may be where the coaching staff thought, we need a goalie that will steal us a game to be able to advance. And I think that's why they went with Jonathan Quick, where Corey Schneider and potentially Ben Bishop are much more consistent. When the speed of the game is so high, you need a goalie that will stay a little bit more structured and in the crease to get success, right? If you challenge out, if you're very acrobatic, you're going to get yourself put in a position where you may get exposed. So I think that's where Jonathan Quick, you saw it against Canada. Pucks were bouncing off the back wall. It's in the net. Matt Duchene comes in on a half breakaway, makes him open up. The two-on-ones, you go back door, he's out of the play. So for me, I think in this type of competition where the speed is that fast, you needed a goalie that probably would stay home a little bit more. And Corey Schneider would have been my pick. But again, there's no wrong decision in the goalies. That's not why they lost. I think they just couldn't muster enough offense to stay in games.
Marty, speaking of Canada's goalie, Carey Price, you know, he hadn't played a meaningful game since November and then comes in and you know, like you said, didn't have a great game the first game against the U.S. Were you at all concerned about his play coming in, or was there no cause for concern?
Yeah, I'm not concerned about Carey Price's with the Montreal Canadiens and getting himself in midseason form at midseason and continuing on and be the MVP Vezina Trophy type goalie that we know he can be. Now, at this stage, not having played, not having had a training camp where you have junior players and American League players and you can kind of ease yourself in, and having a few preseason games where you can ease yourself in, I think that would have helped. So at this stage, I was a little bit concerned that maybe this was too much, too soon, too fast for him to be able to perform. And you're still seeing it where there's a few flaws in his game, and he's not Carey Price of last season before the injury or even 2 years ago, but he's still a very good, very capable Carey Price in that. And I think that's all Team Canada needs. Corey Crawford did really well. Brayden Holtby would do well as just like the other two. So, but you went with Carey Price in the Olympics, and you're going to go with Carey Price now, and he'll probably be the guy for the next 6-8 years. So you've got to give your star goalie a chance, and that's what they did, and he's done well.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the World Cup of Hockey. Marty, sticking with Team Canada, when they gave Carey Price that night off, they went to Corey Crawford in that instead of Brayden Holtby. And Crawford has been the backup, and Holtby has been the healthy scratch throughout for all the games where Price has been in that. Are you surprised that it seems like Corey Crawford is quote-unquote second on the Team Canada depth chart and Brayden Holtby is the third goalie?
No, I'm not surprised. Again, you can't go wrong with those three, and whatever decision you make is going to be the right one if you end up winning the gold. Whatever decision you make is going to end up being the wrong one if you don't get a medal, and that's just plain and simple. Same thing with Team USA. I mean, if Jonathan Quick goes out and steals your game, you say, wow, what a gutsy call to put Jonathan Quick in there. You only get justified by the result, but there's no wrong decision there. Corey Crawford is a very capable goalie, and I think the difference between Brayden Holtby and Corey Crawford is that Crawford has never really had to steal games with the Chicago Blackhawks. He's had to be steady. He's had to be consistent and not let a bad goal in. And the mindset is his strength, you know, to be able to play good in that mindset. Where Brayden Holtby has had to face a lot more adversity, a lot more scoring chances. The team has had to rely on him a lot more. So I don't know that is. I think he could have done it, and no problem, but I think that's where the decision-making came into play. Is, okay, what has been Corey Crawford's mindset for the last 5 years, and what has been Brayden Holtby's mindset for the last 5 years, and how is that mindset going to give us results with Team Canada. So I think they had a backup plan, which was Corey Crawford, if Carey Price wasn't going to be able to play well. But it was a very distant plan B. They all put every effort to get Carey Price, and not Corey Price, as they said at, before the game the other day. But they made all the effort to get Carey Price in there at his peak, and it's been working well for them.
Marty, we got to continue with the goaltenders, and we have you on quite often, and we seem to always ask you about Henrik Lundqvist. And I've been so impressed with the way Henrik Lundqvist has played for Team Sweden, of course, in the semifinals against Team Europe this afternoon. Do you think Henrik Lundqvist almost has more to prove than some of the other starting goaltenders in this tournament, considering that he didn't have the regular season and playoffs that he probably wanted to have last year?
I don't know if he has more to prove than Sergei Bobrovsky, to be honest with you. I think goalie Bob hasn't been really up to the standards in Columbus, and now he's put in a situation with Team Russia where they're competitive, and he's responding. He's my, to me right now, he's been the best goalie in the tournament. So, but the thing with Henrik that's impressed me is how he reacts to shots and how he reacts to pucks. And I think that he's always been really good at those type of competition, the best-on-best competition, because he can handle the speed, he can handle the sharpshooters, he can bounce back from a bad period or a bad goal or a bad game. He's extremely strong mentally. So there is a sense of comfort and there's a sense of confidence that when Lundqvist gets to the world stage, to the Olympics, to the World Championship, to the World Cup, he will do good. So when you put all of that together, you see his performance against Team North America. If it hadn't been for Lundqvist, Team Sweden would be out because Team North America would have beaten them in regulation. And with Team Russia beating the Czechs the way they did, the goal differential would have kicked Sweden out. So they better thank their goalie for making all those saves in regulation, because that is what put them in the first place of that group. It would have been a three-way tie at two wins and one loss, and Sweden would have been out when you considered all the tiebreakers. So, yeah, Lundqvist is a force. He's still in his prime. The window's not closing on him. He had a quote this morning saying, the window's not closing on him and the New York Rangers or Team Sweden. He still can play at a high level, so just watch him. And it'd be interesting to see how he can react again against possibly Canada in the finals if both Sweden and Canada advance.
Marty, we'll let you go on this last question, and shifting away from the World Cup of Hockey to the Winnipeg Jets and their goaltending situation. Training camp underway today, and the Jets have three goaltenders really battling for two spots. The, you know, the fan favorite, or the probably the goaltender with the highest upside, is Connor Hellebuck, but he's the only one of the three goalies who's got AHL eligibility left. From a goalie's perspective, when you're into a training camp battle where you know that one of the three of you is not going to be able to make the team and is going to be likely down with the AHL or on a different franchise altogether, how does that change your mindset entering into a training camp? How difficult is that as a goalie to know you're really in the midst of a battle for your job on this team?
Well, I'll use my personal experience for that. My third pro year. So after going to the Calder Cup final, winning the goalie of the year in the AHL and being second in MVP voting that year in the AHL, I showed up in camp thinking, this is my job. I'm getting this job. I knew I still had exemption from waivers, so I could go back to the AHL without the Sabres losing me. But Dominic Hasek and Dwayne Rolison were there, and I wanted to beat Dominic Hasek. I was going for the number one job, and I still remember, I was the best goalie at training camp. 99-2000, I was the best goalie at the training camp. I was played better and practiced better than Dom, although Dominic Hasek is a legend, and, you know, he'd always be the number one goalie. But I surely played better than Dwayne Rolison. And then at the end of training camp, the last couple of days, they called me in the office, and they said I was going back to Rochester. I didn't like it one bit. I made my displeasure known. I told them this was bull crap, if we can say that.
You can.
I said, you know, I'm going to be back here before you know it, and I'll prove you guys that you made a mistake. So I went back to the American League, played six games with 6-0, and then got a phone call to come back to Buffalo because they started the season 0-4-2, won my first game in Buffalo, and then Dominic Hasek was injured two games later, and then I stayed and never went back. So you always have to think that yes, you know what, it's a hard situation for Connor Hellebuyck to be in because, yes, he has the bigger upside, and he's probably the goalie between now and, you know, 24 months that will be the number one guy in Winnipeg. But just go in the camp, show up, perform, make it hard for them to make a decision, and if the decision is good for you, great. If it's not, keep working, and the opportunity will be there because you have the chance to show everybody that you're going to work hard, you're going to have results, and you're not going to quit. That's what you got to do if you want to leave them with a lasting impression. You don't want to go in a negative way and feel sorry for yourself because that's never going to get you anywhere.
Marty Biron is an analyst for TSN, for the NHL Network, and for RDS. Marty, always appreciate your time and your insight. We'll do it again soon. Thanks very much.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good Saturday and good semifinal tonight.
Enjoy it, Marty. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.